You know that here at Your Move, we are all about helping people make better decisions. In fact, did you know that adults make an average of 35,000 decisions per day? Big or small, decisions add up, and they play a huge role in where you find yourself right now. And that's why we created the Your Move app, a destination for better decision-making that puts you on track for your desired future. Your time, your money, your happiness, it's all on the table. Download the free Your Move app for on-demand access to Your Move episodes, application ideas, and ways to connect further. Search for Your Move with Andy Stanley in the App Store to get started. We really do believe that the next 30 minutes will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So today, we're going to begin with Andy's first message in his four-part series, Your Move. We have all made decisions that make us look back and think, how could I have been so dumb? In this episode, Andy reveals a question that can help prevent more regrets.
Welcome to Your Move. On this series of broadcasts, we're talking about decision making. Now, if you're in the middle of making a big decision, or if you know someone who's making a big decision, then I think you're going to be so glad that you joined us today. After all, life is all about decision making, isn't it? You are where you are in part because of the decisions that you've made. Your greatest regrets are connected to decisions you've made. We can all think of a few decisions we would like to go back and unmake. And let's face it, life's big decisions are never made in an emotionally neutral environment, are they? In fact, it's our emotions that get us into trouble lots of times. For example, have you ever made a really bad relationship decision? At the time, it seemed right. You were in love, or you were in lust, or you were in something, and whatever it was, you were in it, and it was emotional, wasn't it? Because, you know, relationships are emotional. And your mama tried to warn you, and your best friend tried to warn you, but you assured them you knew what you were doing. And you were sure that you knew what you were doing, but you were wrong. And looking back, you think, how could I have not known better? I should have listened. How could I make a decision like that? I should have seen that freight train coming. How about this one? Have you ever made a bad purchasing decision? Sure you have, we all have, but you know, once you got your heart set on it, whatever it was over. It was like something took over and took that credit card out of your hand, and you found yourself handing your credit card to someone you didn't even know, to buy something you didn't need and really couldn't or shouldn't afford. And looking back, you wonder, how could I have been so stupid? In fact, raise your hand if you own a car or a couch you wish you'd never purchased. Yeah, that's a lot of you. That's what I thought. In fact, there are a couple of you watching me right now on a television you wish you had never purchased. And then there are those decisions we never imagined we'd ever have to make, those unanticipated decisions. Here's one. Have you ever had a friend that was bad for you? Some people call these toxic relationships. You like them, but you're becoming like them, and you don't like what you're becoming. And then somebody else comes along and points out the fact that you're changing for the worse. And suddenly you have a decision to make, a decision you never thought you'd have to make, a decision you don't want to make. Because either way you go, you lose something. Either you lose a friend or you lose a part of you. And you can't have it both ways. Some of you have faced a similar dilemma in your professional life. You love your job, you love the company that you work with, but you're starting to have this feeling that you're being pressured to do things that aren't comfortable, things that aren't ethical, maybe even things that border on illegal. And you know what you would tell somebody else in your shoes to do, but it's hard when it's you, because either way, you lose something. You can't have it both ways. Now, one other dynamic that makes the whole decision-making thing so difficult is that we never know what hangs in the balance of the decisions that we're making, do we? In fact, in some cases, it takes a lifetime to know what was hanging in the balance of one of our decisions. In some cases, it takes generations to know. For example, and granted, this is an extreme example, but just go with me. What if George Washington had decided to allow Congress to make him king? Think about the implications of that decision. Think about where we would be today as a nation. How about this one? And again, it's extreme. Imagine if Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had been content to stay up north and to remain silent about what he knew was taking place in the South. The results of that decision continue to play out even in our lifetime. Now, I know you're not George Washington and you're not Dr. King, but just think about this. Generations of people could be impacted by your decisions. In fact, if you plan on bringing children into this world, if you have already brought children into this world, I guarantee you, your personal decisions have generational implications. Now, think how different your life would be if your parents or even your grandparents had decided differently about just a few small things. Your grandparents or parents made some what seemed to them to be very insignificant decisions, but those decisions determine the trajectory of your entire life, didn't they? In fact, in some cases, they determined whether or not you would even have a life. They didn't think about you during those times. You weren't even around to be thought of. But you've been impacted by their decisions, for better or for worse. Now, for somebody out there watching, your life would be very different today if your daddy hadn't chosen to keep picking up that bottle, right? For somebody else, your life would be completely different if your mama hadn't run off and left you and your brother and your sister with your daddy. For some of you, the opposite's true as well. Maybe your daddy's the one that broke that habit and kept the family together. Maybe your mama chose to stay when a lesser woman would have run off. The point is this: we never know what or who hangs in the balance of the decisions that we're making. But what we do know is this, that private decisions have public ramifications. Your private decisions probably won't remain or stay private. Your personal decisions are going to impact some other persons. So, in this four-part series, I'm going to give you four questions that will empower you to make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. These four questions should serve as a filter or a grid through which you make all of your decisions. Now, the whole idea of having a filter for decision making may sound a bit strange, but the truth is, you already have one. Did you know that every time you make a decision, you run your decisions through a grid or a mental filter? Every time you make a decision, you run it through some kind of decision making grid. Unconsciously, you ask questions like, will this make me happier? Will this make me richer? Will this make me healthier or unhealthier? Is this something I'm going to enjoy? Is this the right thing to do? Does this decision have the potential to hurt someone? So in this series, I want to suggest adding four more questions to your arsenal. I'll give you the first one this week and then three more in the weeks that follow. So here we go. Question number one. And honestly, this may be the most difficult question to ask. So you ready? Here we go. The question is, am I being honest with myself? Am I being honest with myself? In fact, I want to add something to this question. This may be the most important part. You ready? Am I being honest with myself really? Am I being honest with myself really? In fact, I would like for us to actually repeat that question out loud together. And I know that's going to be a little strange. And if you're by yourself, it's going to sound a little strange. If you're with a group of people, it's going to be like really, really strange. But it's important to hear yourself ask this question. If you're sitting in a bar reading this across the bottom of a television screen, no problem. The music's so loud, nobody's going to hear you, so you don't have an excuse. So here we go, all together, out loud. Let's say it together. Ready? Am I being honest with myself really? One more time. Am I being honest with myself really? Now, here's why that's such an important question. When it comes to selling ourselves on bad ideas, bad decisions, we are all professional salespeople. You may not be able to sell anybody anything else, but you are good at selling yourself on bad ideas. When it comes to convincing ourselves to do the wrong thing, we're all experts. When it comes to building and arguing a case for why we should do something we know we shouldn't do, we are unassailable litigating fools. We all deserve an honorary law degree. Now, you don't have to think any further back than your last dessert to know this is true. Remember what you told yourself? Remember how you convinced yourself that it was okay to eat that dessert? You don't? Let me remind you. You said something like this. Well, since I didn't have dessert at lunch, a little dessert now isn't gonna hurt anything. What? Listen, the reason you didn't have any dessert at lunch is because you're convinced you shouldn't eat dessert. So what does that have to do? How is that as an excuse for eating dessert at dinner? How about this one? This is the one I use. I've been working hard lately. I deserve something sweet. What does working hard have to do with putting something in your body that you know you shouldn't put in your body, that you'd be better off without? Or how about this one? I'm planning to exercise tomorrow. Now, that's actually a reason not to eat dessert. So you see my point. We're all expert salespeople when it comes to selling ourselves on bad ideas. We've all sold ourselves on what we want to do to the neglect of what we ought to do, right? You with me? Now, granted, an extra dessert once in a while isn't the end of the world, but there are some decisions on which your future hinges. You talk yourself into opting for some things and you pay. And in some cases, you pay for the rest of your life. How about this? Do you have a DUI or maybe a felony conviction that keeps raising its ugly head at the most inopportune times, maybe an ex-spouse that keeps coming back around for more money. Don't you wish you could go back and talk yourself out of rather than into the decision that led to some of those outcomes? Sure you do. And let's face it, we all have the capacity to talk ourselves into things we can't easily get out of. For example, I call these the big D's, and we touched on two of these earlier, but just to make sure you're following me. First one is this dumb purchases, and then they're doomed relationships, and the third one is destructive habits. Any of these ring a bell? Those dumb purchases, that's all the stuff you purchased that you shouldn't have purchased. It's stuff that you talked yourself into purchasing, right? I mean, who made you buy that stuff? You did. The car salesman just gave you the information to support the decision that basically you'd already made. You can't blame him, can't blame her. How about all that debt you're carrying? Who made you flash that card? Who talked you into making the minimum payment month after month after month? You did. You're good at this without a single lesson. What about these? Ever had one of these, a doomed relationship? You know, you knew he or she wasn't good for you two dates in. They were not who you had been waiting for and looking for all your life. But what did you do? You started selling yourself. Well, he doesn't have a job. He hasn't had a job. Not sure he'll ever have a job, but he's such a great guy. And the fact that he still lives with his mama, it just says so much about him. Really? What exactly does it say about him other than he can't afford to live on his own? And guys, you've done this as well, right? She's a bit manipulative, and she's admitted she can't handle money, and she's constantly texting her boyfriend, says it's because she owes him money. But she's so much fun to be with, and she has great taste in restaurants, expensive taste. But hey, I think that's because she appreciates quality. Yeah, I'm sure she does. See, we're good at this, aren't we? And then we get through that, and we look back, and we think, how did I miss the signs? How could I have been so clueless? But the problem is, it's not that you're clueless. The problem is, like any good sales associate, you assisted yourself in seeing what you wanted to see and you ignored current reality. You simply ignored what was right there in front of you. And then there's the third D, destructive habits. I'll bet that when you began the thing that became a habit, the salesperson inside of you whispered, "You can handle this. You'll always be the master. You'll never be mastered." And you believed you, but you were wrong. And what you assumed would be a pleasurable pastime turned out to be a what? A pathway, didn't it? A pathway that led to an all-consuming habit, an addiction that may have been avoided, like doomed relationships and dumb purchasing decisions, if you had paused long enough to ask our question, am I being honest with myself, really? Am I being honest with myself, really? Now, remember this. This is so important. You rarely have to sell yourself. You rarely have to sell yourself on a good idea, right? You rarely have to sell yourself on the right thing to do, the healthy thing to do, the responsible thing to do. You just know, don't you? Good ideas rarely need any defense. When you start selling yourself on something, that's the time to hit the pause button and to ask, am I being completely honest with myself, really? If so, why am I selling so hard? Maybe a diagram will help. Check this out. Here's how it works. What happens is our heart gets all wrapped around something or someone, and we experience desire, we experience want. So the heart sends a message to the brain, and the heart says, "Hey, brain, I want this, so go figure out a way to justify it for me." Now, our brains are really smart. That's why we call them brains. And our brains know that whereas it's difficult to justify a want, it's not so difficult to justify a what? That's right, a need. So the first thing that the brain does is it upgrades the messaging to something more sophisticated than want. The brain says, "You need this." And once you're convinced you need something, then it's easy to sell yourself on it. In fact, before long, you have dozens of justifications for buying it, asking it out, drinking it, smoking it, or using it. But the reasons we use to sell ourselves aren't the real reasons, are they? Of course not, because we know better. We listen to our convoluted, confused reasoning until we actually believe it. And once that starts, it is so, so difficult to be honest with ourselves. Now, that leads us to the question that's begging to be asked, and the question that will point us in the direction of a solution. And here it is. Why are we so prone toward self-deception? Why do we lie to ourselves? Why do we talk ourselves into things that we later regret? It never goes well. Why? And how is it that we're so good at it? Again, not a single lesson. I think the best explanation comes from the lips of an Old Testament prophet. His name was Jeremiah. Now, if you're not a Bible person or a church person or a religious person, that's not a problem. In fact, I'm not expecting you to believe the whole Bible. I'm not expecting you to change anything you believe about the Bible. I just want you to consider a single statement from a man who worked as an advisor to several foolish kings, kings whose lives would have been so much better if they had listened to this one bit of advice. Let me give you a little context. Jeremiah was a prophet in Israel around 600 BC. He served as God's mouthpiece to several of Israel's kings, and time after time he would warn them about the dangers of breaking Israel's agreement with God, and time after time, they would simply ignore his advice, talk themselves into making bad decisions, stupid decisions, and guess what? They'd have the same outcome time after time after time. Sound familiar? For example, there was young King Jehoiakim. King Jehoiakim decided it would be a good idea to lead the nation of Israel in rebellion against Babylon. Now, at that time in Israel's history, Israel was like a puppet state. It paid an annual financial tribute to Babylon, who in turn provided military assistance and pretty much let the king of Israel do whatever the king of Israel wanted to do. But Jehoiakim decided he'd had enough of that, so he quit sending the tribute to Babylon, and he let it be known that Israel was throwing off Babylonian rule. Now, when you look at this map, you can see how foolish this was. Right here is Jerusalem. The nation of Israel is a small sliver of real estate by comparison. And then here's the Babylonian Empire. I mean, this was crazy. It'd be akin to maybe the smallest town in your state declaring war on the United States of America. Pointless. So Jeremiah warned Jehoiakim. He told him, this is a terrible idea. He said, not only is it a bad idea, it's in direct opposition to God's will for the nation at this time. By that time, Jehoiakim had already made up his mind. Things were in motion. He moved ahead. And so when Nebuchadnezzar got word, he invaded Jerusalem. He took Jehoiakim off the throne and replaced him with a brand new king, King Zedekiah. And then he did something interesting. King Nebuchadnezzar took Jehoiakim to Babylon, and he added him to his king collection. That's right. Nebuchadnezzar had a king collection. Some people collect coins. Some people collect baseball cards, shot glasses, cars. Nebuchadnezzar collected kings. Here's how it worked. Every time he would conquer a nation, he would bring the king home with him, put him in chains, and add him to his king collection. And then, on special occasions when he wanted to show off just how powerful he was, he would throw a big party and parade all of his kings out in front of his guests for his guests to see, and each king would have his hand on the shoulder of the king in front of him because not only were they bound in golden chains, they were blind, thanks to King Nebuchadnezzar. So, anyway, no sooner had Nebuchadnezzar left Jerusalem than he gets word that King Zedekiah has done the very same thing that King Jehoiakim had done. And so Jeremiah comes to Zedekiah and says, you know, what are you doing? I mean, you're making the same mistake your predecessor made. You saw what happened to him. He's in Babylon. He's part of Nebuchadnezzar's king collection. And so Jeremiah predicted the destruction of the city. Then he predicted the destruction of the king's family. But kings will be kings, and kings don't like to be told what to do. So when Zedekiah realized that Jeremiah wasn't going to shut up, he shut him up by dropping him into a cistern and decided to do his own thing and disregard Jeremiah's prophecy. So what did Nebuchadnezzar do? Nebuchadnezzar returns to Jerusalem. He lays siege to the city, starves the Jews into submission, and then toward the end of the siege, Zedekiah attempts to escape the city with his family. He's captured, then he's forced to watch as his children are executed by Nebuchadnezzar's guards, and that would be the last thing he would ever see. He was blinded, wrapped in golden chains, and then he was added to Nebuchadnezzar's king collection in Babylon. Now, when you hear a story like that, you can't help but wonder, why didn't they listen? Even a casual observer would know that resistance was futile. There was no way that was going to end well. But interestingly enough, it was during his interaction with stubborn King Zedekiah that Jeremiah penned the words that explain why it is that we are so prone toward self-deception, why we are so good at selling ourselves on bad options. Here's what he wrote. The heart is deceitful above all things. There it is. The heart as in every heart. Your heart, my heart, the heart is deceitful. Now that's pretty brutal. Now think about this. There's a big difference between being dishonest and being deceitful. Dishonest is easier to spot than deceitful, isn't it? Dishonest is just straight up not honest. But deceitful implies an agenda. Deceitful usually includes a mix of truth, half-truth, and just untruth. Now, if our hearts straight up lied to us all the time, that would be pretty easy to catch. But deceitful, that's different. That's more difficult to detect. You've met dishonest people who just weren't shrewd enough to deceive you. Their dishonesty was so apparent you didn't fall for it. But deceitful people, that's different. They're dangerous. So Jeremiah chose his words carefully. Our hearts are deceitful. They can be dangerous. Perhaps that's why we're so convinced and at times so convincing. We don't merely lie to ourselves, we deceive ourselves. But Jeremiah is not done. Look at this. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Do you know what that means? It means there's no cure. It's a permanent condition, which means we have to take permanent action to keep from being deceived. But he's still not through. What he says next explains something we have all seen and we've all experienced. Check this out. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? This is why we look back at things we do and we say, I don't understand why I did that. I don't understand why I went there. I don't understand why I called her back. That doesn't even make sense. I would never tell somebody else to do what I just did. This explains why you've seen some smart people make some not so smart decisions. You watch them and you think, what were they thinking? How could they be so deceived? They should know better. But now you know. They suffer with the same heart condition you do, the same heart condition I suffer from. The same heart condition that's universal to all men and women. Our hearts are deceitful. Again, this is permanent. There's no cure. You will never graduate from this. You will never mature past this. You will always have a propensity to deceive yourself, to talk yourself into things that you should be talking yourself out of. Now, I know that sounds hopeless. I mean, if there's no cure, what's the point of even trying? And while it's true that there's no permanent cure, there is a way to keep our deceitful hearts in check. And to do that, you simply need to have a heart-to-heart with yourself. You need to have a heart-to-heart conversation with you. You need to tell yourself the truth, and hear me out. You need to tell yourself the truth even if you don't plan to do anything about it. You need to be honest with yourself, really. Now, the problem is, of course, that telling ourselves the truth can be absolutely, check this out, absolutely terrifying. I mean, after all, once we're honest with ourselves, we become accountable. Accountable to who? Accountable to ourselves, which means once we hear ourselves giving our friends and family members all those excuses, you know, all those reasons we've come up with to support what really are bad decisions, we know we're lying. But while being honest with ourselves can be a bit terrifying, telling ourselves the truth can also be very liberating. How? Well, telling yourself the truth, owning up to the real reason you're considering what you're considering, ultimately it will bring clarity. You will see better. You'll see clearer than you've ever seen before. Telling yourself the truth will ultimately empower you to make the right decision. And that's why this is such an incredibly important question. Am I being honest with myself? Really, am I telling myself or am I selling myself? Am I telling myself the truth or am I selling myself a regret? Now, as we close, I want to ask you a series of questions. Some of these questions won't have anything to do with your current circumstances, but perhaps one or two of them will. These are the kinds of questions you should get in the habit of asking yourself. Now, odds are nobody's around, and even if they are, they can't read your mind. So there's no reason for you not to be absolutely honest. In fact, I'll even give you an out. You don't have to do anything with what you're about to think. Just be honest with yourself, okay? Ready? Here we go. Here's the first question. What's the real reason you don't call your kids? Why don't you call your kids? Not the excuses you've been telling yourself and maybe even your friends or neighbors. What's the real reason? Hey, what's the real reason you're moving? Why are you moving? Really? What's the real reason you continue to go out with him? What's the real reason you continue to go out with her? Really? Why did you file for divorce? Really? Are you willing to tell yourself the truth? Why did you file for divorce? Really? What's the real reason you moved in? What's the real reason you moved in? You've told everybody it was financial, but come on, you owe it to yourself. What's the real reason? Why are you taking that job? Really? Why are you changing jobs? Why do you drink so much? Really? What's the real reason? Why did you quit going to church? Not the reason you've recited so many times that you've actually begun to believe it. What's the real reason? You don't have to go back to church, but at least be honest with yourself. Why'd you quit going? See, those are brutal questions, but those are the kinds of questions that we need to ask ourselves to ensure that we don't continue to deceive ourselves, to sell ourselves on something that's really a bad idea. And yeah, I know, it's terrifying, but ultimately it's liberating because it brings clarity and it's going to empower you to do what you know in your heart you really ought to do. Throughout our lives, you're going to be forced to make decisions you don't really want to have to make. Every single one of them will be emotional. There are no emotionally neutral environments, right? And we will be prone to opt for happy over healthy. We're going to be prone to opt for pleasure over self-control, now over later. And because the heart is deceitful, you're always going to be prone to talk yourself into things that you'll regret later. But it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to continue to be that way. There's a way out of that destructive cycle. And although we've never met, I bet there's something in you that wants out as well. So take a baby step. Start being brutally honest with yourself. Quit lying to yourself. Refuse to make up reasons that really aren't reasons. And when you catch yourself selling yourself, just stop and say, "There I go again." Pause to have a little heart-to-heart with yourself by asking yourself, "Why am I doing this really? Why am I doing this really?" Let's face it, Jeremiah was right. The heart is deceitful above all things, and it's beyond cure. But now you know, and now you know what to do with what you know. And now it's your move. Hey, thank you so much for joining us this week on Your Move. Next week, I'm going to give you a second question designed to help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So until then, I hope you have a great and regret-free week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move. Don't forget to check out the new and improved Your Move app. Unlike most things in life, it's free. Take Your Move with you on the go and make better decisions a part of your everyday. More people and more cities making better decisions could change culture as we know it.